I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the SmackDown After Show. I am Josh Fair. Whole crew is hanging out with me once again. We got, first off, Mr. Tom Connolly.
Hello, I'm here.
You are here, full of energy, I can see.
Listen, also, I've been trapped in a house with two babies for 17 weeks.
Hey, this is what you signed up for, dude. Just saying.
I know.
And then hanging out with us as well is Miss Gabby.
Well, he didn't sign up for coronavirus. Hi, guys.
Yeah, I did not sign up for that.
Exactly. He didn't sign up for coronavirus. He did sign up to have a family, but that's about it. Present. I'm here.
Yes. Yes, you are. Also present is one Brian Santos. How are you, sir?
Hello. Doing well. Just hanging out as usual. Hot tubbing.
Just hot tubbing as always. Hashtag hot tubbing. All right.
It'd be great if you were like doing the show from a hot tub.
Right. Hi, guys.
With a drink.
Bryant, next week, that is your homework assignment. You need to do the show from your hot tub. Figure out a way.
It says 15 minute maximum, so that would be like a very, very short show.
Only wrestling rap.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll pause to let you get in the hot tub for wrestling rap.
Next week. You can be like Jericho.
Yes.
So SmackDown this week. Overall, I actually thought this was a very good SmackDown until the last 20 minutes, and we'll get into that. But overall, I thought actually, as far as progressing towards Money in the Bank, I thought the show did a solid job for everything, you know, going on this week. Tom, what did you think overall?
Yeah, I mean, it was a decent show. I mean, end is weird, obviously, but it's at least continuing stuff that's happening, getting us the Money in the Bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got it?
Yeah, I thought it was a good, solid show, good in-ring action. I feel like the matches towards the end of SmackDown before we saw Triple H's segment were cut a little bit too short so that they could include that in. And if we maybe did 5 minutes of whatever they did at the end of the show and then added the rest of that time back to those people, it might have been a better experience.
Yes, I 100% agree. That that tag team match was really, really good. And then it just had like a random ending with that 3 DDT, whatever it was. I loved it though, Alexa Bliss. Love whatever you do, so it's okay. but yeah, it was like, it was very, very like short, cut short out of nowhere, but still a good match.
All right, well, let's go and dive into this week's SmackDown, because as you all could expect, we got plenty of wrestling rap that we have to get into as well. So we're going to have another extended edition of that, much to Gabby's delight this week. So we will get into all that. But let's start the show. We got our 8-time Tag Team Champions New Day out in the ring, celebrating, talking about how they're pretty much now considered one of the greatest tag teams ever. Big E is making fun of Kofi because he's a diehard Patriots fan, and now Tom Brady is in Tampa, and he just cracks some jokes about that. And normally at this time, we're going to think, oh, well, out's going to come Miz and Morrison, or out's going to come the Usos. No, 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 no. Out comes the Lucha House Party, because they want to remind people that they're still employed. So they're sick of waiting for a shot, and they want a title shot, so they want to congratulate, but be like, hey, we're sick of waiting. We've proven ourselves on TV. They proved themselves in Elimination Chamber. Why can't we have a shot at the titles? Out then come Miz and Morrison, complaining how the win, Big E's win was cheap. It wasn't even a tag team match. They should have another shot at the titles. And then the Forgotten Sons show up, and they cut the same promo they've been cutting for the last 2 years on NXT. Just explaining who they are. And the one thing I liked, though, was then Jackson Riker got in Miz's face saying, you're a poser, you played a Marine on TV, I'm a real-life Marine. Everyone kind of brawls. The Forgotten Sons eventually destroy the New Day in a very intriguing segment with four different tag teams. Gabby, let's start with you. What were your thoughts on that?
I like this whole situation. So New Day are back at it again. They have the tag belts, but I liked how they did bring Lucha House Party in, because I am a fan of Lucha House Party, and I am also a fan of like the underdog trying to get an opportunity. So I think that this is good that they included them in the storyline and not just let them sit on the wayside and be another furlough or something. And then I loved how, to be honest, my favorite part of this segment, this is going to sound so ridiculous, but one of my favorite parts was that Lucha House Party spoke Spanish. And then Miz and Miz and Morrison had no idea what they said. I actually did know what they said, because I understand it. And that was really fun for me, because then when Miz asked Morrison, like, what did he say? He had no clue. And that was like so funny to me.
Well, break it down for us. What did they say? What did they say then?
I'm trying to remember everything, but it was three sentences, and it was pretty much like, he said, shut your mouth in Spanish. And then they said, we're here and we see an opportunity to, I think it was like, I don't remember what the verb was, but it was to like go out for those like championship titles, pretty much. Like they saw, they saw that there was an opportunity for them to go after those championship titles. Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Brian, what did you think?
I actually loved, Lucha House Party is one. I love Lince Dorado's promo. He came down the ring. He delivered a really, really solid promo on the way to the ring. We had not heard him talk much in his entire career here in WWE, so I really enjoyed seeing that. Also enjoyed the Spanish as well, Gabby. Did get a little bit confused when Forgotten Sons came out, because I didn't know what they were trying to say or do. They just were forgotten. But I guess they're stealing Lacey Evans' gig about being in the military. I don't know where that's going to go, but we'll see.
Tom?
I mean, I don't think it's good to have Forgotten Sons going right after the New Day. Like, I think they should have just went after Lucha House Party at least. Like, let's like build these guys up. I don't see the idea of let's putting them right into the title picture. It just doesn't make any sense, unless they're going to win. And I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
I actually think, even though, and I know I mentioned this when they debuted a couple weeks ago, I'm personally not really much of a fan of the Forgotten Sons as of yet. Maybe something down the line will change my perspective on it. But if you were to try to push them fast, it's now without an audience. Because if you try to make them in the forefront without getting the fan response, and Michael Cole and Corey Graves keep trying to put them over, when the crowds do show up, they're hoping that this could result in, oh, that's right. No, we hate these guys. They're some of the top guys. While if you were just running regular shows like normal, they showed up in NXT, they weren't getting any type of response, and all of a sudden they show up in front of a live crowd trying to get an attack on the pitcher. Yeah, it would bomb miserably because no one cares about them. So I think they could make the best out of this type of situation if it works out. It might not though.
I think they did a really good promo. I liked how they cut their promo.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was a decent promo. But also, like, why are we supposed to hate these guys?
That's like, the problem.
They're literally used to be in the military. Then why are we supposed to not like these guys?
Yeah. Like, right. And I was confused that's the too. Same issue with Lacey. That was the same issue with Lacey Evans at the beginning. It's like she served our country and has kicked ass. Why are we booing her?
It plays into something else. It has to do with the fact that they are feeling like entitled because they came back from the military, and like, we deserve this and we deserve that, because you do get a lot of benefits when you leave the military. So I think they're trying to play it from an angle of like, we're better than you. You know, we deserve this because we did more than you. So like,
I know that
you might think that that's like babyface because it's like a celebrated thing, but like, the way in which they do it is kind of from an arrogant perspective, not a, wow, I really did something nice for people. Like, they're coming from it at a different angle.
I see bitter. I don't see arrogant.
Yeah. Same. Yeah, I feel like they're like we served this country and we came back and got nothing. We're forgotten. It's like we didn't do anything for this country. That's what I see. That's what I think their whole gimmick is like, we, you know, protected this place, and now we come back and you don't, and we get crap. We get nothing.
I agree.
That's the way I got it. But I do think that there's going to be an element to the heel side that plays into like the we deserve an entitlement end of the stick. If that makes sense.
Well, hopefully they do that, because in the last 2 years in NXT, they never did. So hopefully they do bring something like that, so they get some type of response when crowds start showing up.
Yeah.
Money in the Bank qualifying match, Drew Gulak versus King Corbin. Why is Gulak still coming out to Dan O'Brien's music?
I thought the same.
He has his own music.
Yeah.
He has his own damn music.
It was very confusing.
Not Brian's lackey.
Yeah. I was like, what the hell's happening? This is so stupid.
Because they don't have enough employees to create new music.
No, he already has music.
He has music.
Well, maybe they want to reinvent his music.
Into Daniel Bryan's music?
No, like maybe they don't, since the Daniel Bryan partnership, they don't want to go back to old Drew Gulak. Like they want a new Drew Gulak, but they haven't had time and creative to create something.
Well, and that's fine. You can make him new music, but then keep using the old music until the new music is ready.
Yeah.
But then it wouldn't make sense. Then how are they going to like go to a new song? I don't know.
This doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Most time when people change, like even if they change from heel to face, they still keep the same music. It's not like not many. You have to be pretty high up for people
Bailey.
Yeah, well, she got new music, but
imagine she came out like a badass heel, whatever it is.
I would scream.
I think they should. I mean, I don't know. I don't like Bailey's music. I think they should have. They should have taken her old theme and just slowed it down, or like kind of just like rearranged it to make it like kind of just like,
yeah, or a badass. Bailey's music. You are wrong on that.
Really?
I love her music.
I don't even know it's her half the time. That's what I don't like about it.
Isn't it a Christian zone?
What?
A little
like
bit.
Christian's
yeah.
music, right? Like the, when you close your eyes, you'll find. And I'm like, why does it sound familiar? You're funny.
Maybe that's another part of Bayley's character that we don't know of yet. Anyway, as far as the match itself was fine with Gulak and Corbin. Nakamura and Cesaro show up and pretty much kidnap Dan O'Brien over the barricade. And this distracts Gulak. He turns into a end of days. And Corbin, I guess we're not really feuding with Elias much anymore, which is good.
No, that's not over yet.
I know. But Corbin's not match, so we got him in that. All right. He ain't winning, but he's in it.
Elias is going to cost him?
Elias could very well show up in Stanford in, like, just one of the rooms that Corbin shows up in. That could be.
I have this weird feeling that he's going to win for some reason, because I don't see anybody else winning, and I feel like they want to give him a redemption for making him lose it. So there's something in my heart that's telling me he's going to win.
Oh, I hope not.
I hope not too, but I feel like that's going to happen.
I mean, he got screwed last time, though. He got hardcore last time when he had that Money in the Bank briefcase.
Yeah. Punk's won twice, and
that's it.
Edge won once, but then got the briefcase from Kennedy. So Edge tapped him twice, but Punk's the only one who's won the match twice.
I was there that night live when he won the briefcase from Kennedy.
Do we want someone else to win Money in the Bank twice right now, and do we want that to be Corbin?
Alexa Bliss only.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about Corbin winning.
Yeah.
In the bank.
No, I don't want Corbin to win. It's got to be someone new. Let's give someone else a shot. He's already established.
Come on, Cruz. Come on, Apollo Cruz.
I think that'd be very interesting.
Give him a shot.
Sheamus versus NXT talent Daniel Vidot. Sheamus just beat the living hell out of him. That was that. What was amazing, though, was we go to commercial. We come back. It's a Jeff Hardy segment again around the Sheamus time. And we cut to Michael Cole and Corey. Now, mind you, Sheamus' match has been done for 5 minutes now at this point. And Michael Cole is talking about how Sheamus has been disrespecting him the last few weeks when they're talking about Jeff Hardy. And Carr's like, look behind you. Because somehow Michael Cole never noticed that Sheamus never left ringside. And he just crept up from behind him and
he's busy.
And obliterated Cole's headset when he grabbed him by the head. Like pieces just flew everywhere. And in the midst of this, Lucha House Party and Miz and Morrison are coming out to their match. And Sheamus just like is intimidating Cole and then apparently eventually leaves. And the wrestlers don't acknowledge it. And then Corey and Michael just move right on to the match. I mean, Gabby, was this as odd and uncomfortable as I thought it was?
Yeah, I think for sure it's odd. But in my mind, I feel like Sheamus left and went backstage and then he heard Michael Cole talking smack. And then came back out and did what he did. But we obviously have no idea because we didn't see any of that. But yeah, the placing is just off. Like, I would have definitely reworked the placement of creative and writing.
Yeah, it was weird. I like that Sheamus fought a big guy because it kind of made sense now. It wasn't like him towering over someone that's like 5'2 and destroying him because obviously he's going to destroy him. But with him, yeah. Like, he actually like gave him a fight and there was like an actual squash match that I enjoyed watching as opposed to just decimation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tom, I mean,
again,
sound like your kids are very upset about Sheamus attacking Michael Cole as well.
They are. They're really big fans of Michael Cole. So,
hey,
speaking of being attacked,
yeah,
a painting fell on me. Jeez,
yeah.
So, well, the actual tag team match itself, Miz and Morrison versus Lucha House Party, I really actually enjoyed the story behind the match because when Morrison was in the match, he was absolutely dominant. When Miz was in the match, the House Party was fighting back. And so they definitely made the story of how Morrison is the better of the two.
Duh.
And then when Miz goes to the Skulker finale and Grand Metalik and he rolls him up and pins Miz. So twice in a row now, Miz has been the one who's been pinned for his team and they're falling down the ranks. Big win for Lucha House Party to get themselves in the conversation for a tag title shot. And am I the only one that thinks this is right on the wall that Miz and Morrison are breaking up very soon?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least till maybe they stretch it out and they have a match at SummerSlam.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I think the cracks are already there, so.
No, I don't agree. I don't think that they're going to break up soon. I actually like them together. I like the opposites, because, like, opposites attract. They make a great team, like, one is definitely better than the other. One's has no knowledge. The other one kind of has his shit together. They just like bounce off of each other, and I think it works. So I don't want to see the breakup because it's funny. It's always like good to watch. And to combat what you said, Josh, about like seeing that Morrison's obviously the stronger one in the group. We kind of saw that at the last pay-per-view when Morrison got the belt.
Yes, we did. You're right.
So, yeah, I've been thinking that for a while now.
Brian?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I didn't think they were going to break up until you kind of brought it up. It does show some possible, like, cracks in their armor. But they definitely had a really good match. Lucha House Party shined a lot. And the segments with John Morrison were really excellent as well. So, I hope they don't break up because I do like them together. They're growing on me. I've said it before that sometimes they get a little bit cringy, but they are growing on me as well. So we'll see what happens.
Is there any shot in chance that like Lucha House Party could win a tag team championship?
I hope so.
I think so.
I don't see why not.
I would like to see that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could almost be like if they somehow pulled off the upset and beat the New Day, and then we're almost kind of like transitional champs to then the Forgotten Sons win it from them. And hopefully by that time, Xavier Woods is back. So then you have the tag title feud with the trios going. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that I think that could be a possibility. And it's also a matter of time of when does Kalisto come back from injury? Because they're a trio as well.
Oh, yeah. I love Kalisto.
So, I mean, that could fall into all this also. So I definitely think Lucha House Party should be in the conversation. They obviously have the talent. They just need the TV time. And mm-hmm. now it looks like, at least in the short term, they're finally getting some. So hopefully they are able to make the most out of it. Money in the Bank qualifying match, Sasha Banks versus Lacey Evans. I know I've very rarely said anything positive about Lacey Evans on this show because I'm not a fan of her. Still not a fan of her.
Could you?
However, I honestly think that this was by far her best match as a babyface that I've seen. Mm-hmm. I thought she told the story very well of her hand. You know, get hurt, and obviously Sasha being as incredible as she is, helping tell the story of it well. I thought the two of them worked better than I expected. And then you continued, like we were talking about, showing cracks with Ms. Morrison, continuing to show cracks with Bayley and Sasha. Ref is talking to Bayley while Sasha actually has Lacey pinned. Sasha gets distracted, turns into a woman's right. Lacey gets the win. Lacey is in Money in the Bank. Brian, what did you think of this?
Loved it. I'm so confused at what they're doing with Sasha and Bayley. Like, I know it's going to break up, but I don't know what direction they're going to do it in, because I thought Money in the Bank was the easiest way for Sasha to do that, to break up with Bayley. But I think they want to tell more of a story as opposed to just like a one-off kind of thing with a briefcase. But I love that Lacey won, and I 100% agree with you that it was a really, really good match. She really sold the injury. And the woman's right is super, like, impactful. Like, I hear that, like, even with the crowd, it was really, really strong. And Sasha always sells well. So I love the match. It was really good.
Yeah. I mean, I also – oh, sorry. You go first, Tom.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, Sasha sold the hell out of that. Like, I've mm-hmm. said it before. I hate that that's a finishing move. But, I mean, Sasha at least sold it to where, like, you know, made
where it
look really
like
good.
A finishing move. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice. I actually loved Lacey Evans at the very end when she hit the woman's right while holding the picture that mm-hmm. Sasha had of her daughter, because like that's kind of like saying, like, you know, like, this is my motivation and you're not gonna, like, you know, take my daughter's name in vain or her face in vain, whatever. I just like how she stood up for that and like and was able to defeat Sasha Banks in this way. And then I love the character integrate, the storyline integration of, you know, Bayley, Sasha versus Lacey, but then also with the Tamina storyline and how she came out at the end and knocked Bayley out. I'm really happy Lacey Evans is in the Money in the Bank. I think she deserves it. I would like to see her. I think it's going to be fun to watch her in this match, as opposed to, like, the people we always see. Like, Lacey Evans, even though she's been on the main roster for a bit, to me, she still feels fresh and new, and she's still developing who she is as a character. And, like, I want to see more of her, so I'm excited for this.
Yeah, and you actually brought up a great point. I forgot to mention, as far as the little picture of her daughter, like you were saying, because this whole feud began with Sasha up against the barricade talking trash to Lacey's daughter. So her holding the picture while giving the women's right, it was like kind of a little closure to their mini feud of, like, mm-hmm. you know, this was for my daughter, because her daughter was on the hand when she did it.
Yeah.
And then like you said, also top of them, Tamina shows up while Bayley and Sasha arguing at the top of the stage, super kicks Bayley, and Sasha just stands there. So it's, you know, still, you know, again, more cracks, more seeds being planted, etc. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like you guys, very intrigued on where this is going.
Yeah, a lot of layers.
A lot of layers. It's an onion, for crying out loud.
Just doesn't smell bad.
No, you don't cry when cut it into.
Yeah.
Women's Tag Team Championship on the line, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross versus Carmella and Dana Brooke. I thought the match was solid. Brian, you kind of touched on it at the beginning of the show. It seemed shorter than expected. But I loved the fact that Alexa and Nikki have a finisher now. You know, taking Alexa's DDT and mixing it almost like a modified 3D, and it looked great. And they pinned Carmella. So Dana Brooke wins the Money in the Bank qualifying match in a surprise last week, is not the one pinned this week. Carmella has her Money in the Bank match next week. Are we almost trying to see the friendly competition between the two of them? I was just like, oh, I did mine. You're losing. Can you start winning? Oh, Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like I said last week, I think it's leading to Carmella heel turn.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I just think it's going to – I mean, Carmella turning heel is where we're going with this. So, sorry if you thought Dana Brooke is winning Money in the Bank, because that's definitely not happening.
Oh, my goodness.
What? Come on, you don't see her flexing while holding the briefcase?
That'll be cute. I like that.
No.
That'll be really cute.
Sorry,
you know, Alexa does like the little shoulder thing. Like, you know, Dana can get her own.
But Brian, what were your thoughts on the match?
It's funny you mentioned, because I actually didn't like the finisher. I prefer when they did the mixed finisher they had, which was Nikki's Neckbreaker into a Twisted Bliss. Because I guess maybe just because it was the first time, I love Alexa, but she was like, you know, she's very short. So she had to jump up and try and reach where Nikki picked her up. So I was like, it was cute, but maybe we'll try again next week and we'll see what happens. But yeah, I don't know who's going to win women's Money in the Bank match. I think it's definitely a lot of different options. I just hope that Shayna Baszler does not win. That's all I'm going to say.
Do you think Alexa, if she, say, jumped off the bottom rope, like in the middle, and just tried to jump off that into it, do you think it would look better or worse that way?
No, that'll look worse, because I feel like they're like they would have to like set it up in a really, really particular way too. So
yeah,
that'd be where I think it'd be more dangerous.
Mm-hmm. I'd definitely be more dangerous. That's true.
I think if anything, maybe it should just be. I'm trying to think how they could do it differently. I mean, I like it. It's different. It's already got a name like the 3DT. Want to call it that.
Wait, so was your suggestion originally just now to go from the middle rope, Josh? Is that what you said?
No. So my thought was, because Alexa's so short, it's like, well, if they were to time it right. But yeah, it is definitely more dangerous. Where, say, she's like towards in the middle of the ring. Because you're not in a corner, but she puts herself on the bottom rope and then hops off that into the DDT so she can jump a little higher. But it certainly is more dangerous.
That's a lot of timing to get right.
I prefer it to be done the way they did it on the show. But like you were saying, because there are going to be some of the female wrestlers that are so much taller, that move isn't going to work.
Yeah, I feel she's going to miss it a lot.
Yeah.
Or it's just going to look real sloppy.
Well, because Carmella's not much taller than Alexa.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you suddenly throw
Charlotte Flair.
Yeah, you suddenly throw a woman who's 5'6", 5'7", 5'8", into that. It's going to be a lot tougher for Alexa to get in place.
Yeah, for sure. She can do no wrong, but...
Yeah.
I think it's just a matter of her jumping and, like, catching them on the way down. To make it look, she doesn't have to grab them when they're at the height of that, you know. But we'll see how it works out.
Yeah,
I think that they shouldn't necessarily make changes of like bottom rope or things that have to do with height, because the thing I love about Alexa Bliss is, although she's a shorter wrestler, you don't see her height when she's wrestling because she's so good. So I don't want her to make adjustments based off like height reasons or how she can get somewhere due to that, like faster. I think she just needs to find a way that works for her. But they're still continuing the storyline with her and Nikki Cross. So I'm still enjoying it. It's fun for me. And outside of the ring stuff, I love it when they actually include in creative the segments that Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross to do where they interview someone like they did with Braun Strowman last week. Like, that stuff is really fun for me. So yeah. Keep it going.
And then to cap off SmackDown this week, we have the 25th anniversary of Triple H. The first few minutes were great. He comes out. He goes to do his usual entrance. Someone on the production crew takes his bottle of water, which was hilarious because he can't spit it on anybody. Shawn Michaels comes out. I got two words for you: social distancing. They're making fun of the fact that nobody is there to celebrate Triple H's 25th anniversary. They show a little montage of bloopers. They show a montage of all his WrestleMania losses. Okay, this is all good. The little FaceTime thing with Stephanie, I was okay with that. Then it just created a giant snowball and went, what the hell happened? Now we have Flair getting seriously emotional. Now we have Road Dogg for no apparent reason. We cut to commercial. We go back to the phone. We're just killing time. And Vince shows up. And I don't know what the hell he said.
Me too. Like, he turned off the lights.
He was talking about the gobbledygooker in the mix of this. And like, that was years before Triple H showed up. And he says he loves him. He made fun of him. Kind of.
He made fun of other talent.
Yeah. Made fun of other talent. And then turned the lights on anyone. It's just like, okay, we're 2 weeks away from Money in the Bank. We gave 20 minutes at the end of SmackDown for this. And this elevated no stories. This wasn't like the emotional tempest send-off thing. It would have worked out if Vince started to say, let's turn out the lights, but was laughing about it as a joke. And Vince said, no, it's just kidding. Don't worry about the lights. But then the lights do go out and the Fiend shows up in the ring and takes out Triple H and Michaels as like a signal to Braun. Because then I would at least had something with a story.
Wasn't even thinking of that. And that sounded like that was a great way to end that segment, end the whole show.
Because then it at least had some involvement of some type of storyline, because this did nothing for anybody.
It didn't do anything for Triple H.
No.
Or Shawn Michaels. Or Vince.
It buried Triple H, if anything.
I didn't even know he lost that many times at WrestleMania. Like, that was like news to me. I was like, oh wow, that's like 15 losses.
I believe he has more losses than anybody. I think he has more losses. Him and Big Show have the most losses. Goldust has the worst career record because he's like 0-10 or 0-11. And then Ziggler is right behind him at like 1-10.
But I mean, I don't get what they're trying to do, because it's, is this supposed to make Vince look good? No, it made him look real crazy. Like, I mean, if I was invested, if I had money invested in this company, I would be like, what is happening right now? Like, why are we doing this? This guy has worked his ass off for 25 years for this company. Besides The Undertaker, the most loyal person to this company ever.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, him and Taker, same. I mean, I almost want to say more loyal than The Undertaker, because he worked behind the scenes, you know what I mean? Started NXT. Like, he's...
And his only time off has been due to injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's never really taken just time away.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, him just, I don't know, Vince just being like, oh, so boring. Oh, you're just, like, I get he was trying to, like, I think it's just, oh, I'm trying to make him laugh. And, like, I can't tell if it was Triple H doing a fake laugh. I'm just being like, well, I might as well laugh at this because I don't know what else to do to get out of this segment. Or, like, you know, this is just how they make each other laugh backstage, and we just have never, ever seen anything like that before on TV. I just think it makes Vince look crazy.
I think that's what everyone thinks right now, to be honest. What I'm seeing.
Yeah. It was so bizarre. And like, same. So like the first 5 minutes I thought were very entertaining, very funny. Why do we have to go 15 more?
Yeah. Honestly, like Triple H is great. I agree with you guys. Like he is phenomenal. He really has changed the shape and the structure of WWE and NXT. He's really innovative and supportive of his talent. It's cool. Like even when you go to the big shows like NXT TakeOver, like Triple H sits in the front row and watches it like a fan. And I appreciate that part of him. I think he's a great guy and a great leader. But maybe they should have did a tribute in a different way and like a special segment that's like not affiliated with SmackDown. Maybe they do like additional programming that's available on the WWE network and they just promoted it on our SmackDown show. I said for more on Triple H's 25th anniversary special, go to the WWE network and watch.
They need more content right now, don't they, for Fox and USA? Mm-hmm. Why the hell you don't make some 25th anniversary special for Triple H? Mm.
With nobody there.
No.
Man.
Oh, God. It was like, the thing that just boggled my mind the most is this helped no stories. And you're 2 weeks away from a pay-per-view. And you spent 20 minutes on one of your top shows. And the 20 minutes to end it, the one on Fox, and did nothing for anybody.
Do you guys think that after coronavirus, when things go to phase one of reopening or whatever, that WWE might consider cutting down SmackDown's time frame to like maybe an hour and a half instead of 2 hours and Raw as well? Because
Raw
clearly
should
they're
be
having
1 hour.
Yeah. Like,
Raw would get cut down before SmackDown. But they won't because of all the sponsors.
But we'll post they have a contract. They're filling airtime with, I don't want to say junk, but like random things. And like,
no, you're right. Junk.
So like, what's the point?
Well, you're right. But you also got to remember how many members of their roster were not there.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Even phase one is like, there's still going to be people not there. That's it's going to be hard still.
Yeah. But also, I think it's one of those where, why are we not thinking outside of the box when it comes to what we can do on a show? Granted, Daniel Bryan, say the Fiend's not there this week. Who cares? Get that dude to get in a car and drive somewhere or be in a creepy dark room and cut a promo. Like I don't need to see another video package of the Fiend and Strowman that I've already seen footage of. Like, get something different. Do something different. Show Braun training for this match. Show Bray being weird. Like, there's other, even anybody. I'm going to just those two, but anybody on the roster. Look at all of the other TV shows that are actually happening right now, where it's like people using their phones. Look at us. We're using our computers at home. Like, SNL's doing a whole show where no one is, everyone's at home doing stuff. Like, and that was an hour and a half.
The NFL draft just did 3 days of everything virtual. They set up, they were able to set up cameras at like 60 or 70 of the athletes' homes to record them getting the call from the coaches, let them know they were drafted. People in excitement, people in anger because they were taking longer than expected to get drafted. And so they made the best out of the situation that they were in because they needed to create content. WWE, you have the production capabilities to do things like that, to do things like SNL does, but they haven't done it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for a story, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, but for anything, I just think it's the thing I don't understand is like, also, I don't know if you guys have seen the ratings that came out for SmackDown and for Raw. Literally the lowest ratings they're getting ever right now. So the fact that this is a show where they're bringing people in to work and then they're still getting low ratings when the NFL did everything virtual and people at home and are getting like 8 million people watching.
Yeah, but you realize also this bad press is not good for them either. So we don't know if people are not tuning in because of the bad press or because they're continuing to work during a time where everyone else is safer at home. So we're really not sure of the reason for their drop in ratings. There could be multiple.
Oh, there are definitely multiple reasons. And yeah, there's the PR. There's a number of other items in it. There's the as we were saying, the lack of increase in the storylines, because we just spent 20 minutes on this show praising Triple H instead of doing a story. So there are a number of reasons why for it, but there are a number of stories that we have to get to for Wrestling Wrap, because it's another extended edition of that. So we've been talking too long. Gabby, give us some news.
Well, get ready for more talking, because this is Wrestling Wrap, but we got all the news and hot topics of the week for you. And there's a lot still. So this week for April 26th, we do know that an anonymous person who will not be named, we do not know who this person is, probably for the safety of their own job as well, had put in an urgent request to Orange County's Board of County Commissioners this past Tuesday to shut down WWE's taping at the WWE Performance Center in Orlando, Florida, concerns regarding coronavirus. They actually have an audio file of this meeting where you guys can go online and listen to it. I know John Alba on Twitter at JONALBA posted it. And this person put in their quest saying this complaint: my employer, World Wrestling Entertainment, aka WWE, is forcing me to work the TV tapings for its weekly shows despite home orders for coronavirus. I'm unable to speak out as I need this job, and I know I will be fired if I approach my higher ups. And despite sanitary precautions, we cannot maintain social distancing and have to touch other people. I request the government to shut down these tapings and enforce the stay-at-home order so my colleagues and I may follow social distancing rules without fear or repercussion of losing our jobs. Now, the WWE provided a statement to follow that up with, these accusations aren't true. Employees know that they can confidently go to human resources, not the public. Notwithstanding the appropriate protocol, no one would be fired if they were uncomfortable with their surroundings. We've made accommodations for individuals upon request. Now, this is obviously a very big deal. Do you guys think that if this person named John Smith, I'm just giving you a random name, who filed this complaint with Orange County Commissioner, you think that if they actually would have went to WWE Human Resources, that they wouldn't have been fired over this?
Can I answer your question by asking a question?
Yes.
Have any of you ever gone to Human Resources to complain about something from your boss and then realize after you went, it got worse? Because I have. No.
Oh.
Yeah.
Them saying go to Human Resources is the most hilarious thing that I have ever heard. Because every company has a human resource department, and a lot of them are very needed and very useful for a lot of areas. One area, in my personal opinion, this is just my opinion, because I've had personal experience with it, that they do not help in, is if I went, Gabby, if you're the human resource person and Tom's my boss, I'm going to you and be like, look, Tom has been abusing his power. He's been ordering me to do things that I don't feel are safe, et cetera, et cetera. What's going to happen is you're going to write a report. You're then going to send it over to Tom or to Bryant, who we'll say is Tom's boss. They'll get the information and be like, hey, this was done about you. But then Tom comes back because it's supposed to stay anonymous. So he doesn't know technically who it's from. So Tom is either going to completely change his ways altogether for everyone, or he's going to be angrier because he wants to try to find out who's the one who did it and got him in trouble.
Oh, I'm going to find out it's you.
Right. Done. Right. And if you think a place like WWE would not, like, someone reports to HR and WWE, HR has a talk with Triple H about, hey, you got this complaint about you. I just need you to be aware. You really think he's not going to go and find out who the hell it is and get their ass in more trouble in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah.
I just think it's good. It's just a I don't know, man. It's just weird and it's just all crappy. Like, there's no good way around it. There's no, like, oh, well, we could fix it by doing this. Like, there's just, it sucks. I mean, I think what is going to happen and what really sucks about what's happening now is that all these states are going to start opening. Mm-hmm. All these jobs that are going to be considered that were non-essential before are going to be like, nope, you got to come to work. But are we safe to come to work yet? We don't know. And then either people go, well, I'm not coming to work. And then they go, okay, well, then you don't have a job anymore. Your job's gone. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we'll find someone else to replace you. I don't know. It's just like, it's just a cluster is what's happening. And it just, I don't really know where we go from here when we're still trying to figure everything out.
Yeah, Brian.
It just sucks when something's deemed essential, but it's really not essential.
Yeah, for sure. I 100% agree. I mean, I've been in the HR position as well, being on the HR side of it, and I know that it definitely is a tricky situation, especially with something like this, a crisis. You know, you don't really know how to address it. So I'm sure WWE is trying their best to, like, you know, to be open. But obviously, if you're in that employee's shoes, you don't feel comfortable at risking the possibility of losing your job, you know? So it's just, like Tom said, a whole weird situation that hopefully gets resolved. And we talked about it before. We're not sure why they're still taping. I mean, they're trying to give entertainment to the world, but it's just strange. I don't know.
Yeah. I've always been told from my time working in corporate that you should never go above your boss's head first. Like, the first course of action is to, like, speak to your superior and try to work it out. And then if it can't be solved, then you go take the next step to avoid all of that mess and commotion. But at the same time, this person obviously feels like his job or her job would be at jeopardy and is scared. And so I don't blame them, because, like, in entertainment, I think the rules are a little bit different. I think in entertainment, I know it's not admitted enough, but I think that people lose their jobs more easily over very stupid things. And because you're a face of a company, you're a big brand, and, like, these entertainment companies have a lot of power and they just feel like they could do whatever they want. And it's not always, like, in the best interest of the talent or the production, producer, whatever. So it's a tricky space, because although they might say, you know, you will not get fired if you go to human resources first, that's not necessarily always the truth, in my opinion. So it's hard. It's hard to say. So next up, in other news, we do know that a former XFL commissioner, Oliver Luck, is suing Vince McMahon for wrongful termination. So this is the order of events that took place. Essentially, Vince McMahon is the CEO of Alpha Entertainment, which is the parent company of the XFL. Now, right before Vince had laid off his employees and declared bankruptcy for XFL, he actually sent a letter to the CEO for termination. And so that letter was received on April 9th. And it was literally a day before all those layoffs. And so Mr. Luck is disputing this and rejecting the allegations set forth in the termination letter and contends that they are pretextual and devoid of merit, according to his complaint that he filed with the U.S. District Court in Connecticut. And he was actually a part of this $20 million deal, this huge deal with Vince McMahon that was set in place in May of 2018. And so this is a lot to lose for him, you know? And obviously it was, like, premeditated. He was let go right before this all went down, within days. And so Oliver, this was a statement actually from Vince McMahon. And he said, you know, his parent company, Oliver Luck's services as commissioner and CEO of the XFL were terminated by a letter sent to him on April 9th, 2020, which explained the reasons for the termination. And then Jerry McDevitt of K&L Gates, which represents McMahon, right? That was also from them, too. As to the lawsuit he filed, his allegations will be disputed and the position of Mr. McMahon will be set forth in a response to his lawsuit. Now, Do you guys feel like this CEO of the XFL, or former XFL, sorry, Commissioner Oliver Luck, do you think that he has the right to sue Vince McMahon? Do you think he will win in this lawsuit against Vince McMahon? What's your opinion on what's going on with this situation?
I would say, just to play like devil's advocate, I think that in light of certain circumstances, yes, because we know that things were kind of weird with the company. But if this was any other situation and we didn't have those layoffs, if the XFL was the first to go, it would make a lot of sense. You know, it's their newest thing. They don't even know if it really took off the ground. And if they had to cut some kind of arm of their company to save profit or to save money, then that would make sense, you know, especially the CEO, who would probably be very high paid for this brand new entire league, you know. So I think it makes sense. It's definitely not ethical business practices, but it's something to consider, that considering all these layoffs, it makes sense that he was one of the first people to go. I mean, I hope he does win, because he does have a lot at stake. So we'll see.
What about you guys?
Tom, you go first.
I mean, I don't know. They always say, like, what is it, like, any press is good press, but I mean, the press has been so bad lately for just Vince and this company and anything like associated with it. So it's kind of just like, oh, here's another thing that you got to deal with. I think if anything, they'll settle out of court. He'll get some of his money, probably not all of it. But I think I did read an article that said, like, he had some other job before. I can't exactly remember what his job was, but it was kind of like Vince was like, oh, I'll guarantee to pay you this money if you leave this other job. And then he was like, okay, cool, I'll leave this job because I'm going to get this other money. And then, like, the second things start to kind of turn, they're like, nope, sorry, you're done, bye. Like, days before. And, like, I think they sent him a letter saying he did something wrong, too, or something. Like, for his, like, wrongful term, like, whatever the wrongful termination. So it's like, I think it's just like, all right, let's try to find something to get rid of him so we can say, like, oh, he did this wrong, and now we don't have to pay him anymore.
Yeah, you mean like they were covering their butts. So
yeah,
they said,
yeah,
he did this, we're terminating you, so yeah, that he couldn't fire back at them and say, this is wrongful lawsuit, even though that's what he's doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, get his money. Don't worry.
I'm excited to talk about this, because being that I'm the sports nut, so this all falls in this. So Oliver Luck is a former professional athlete, and he is the father of former NFL star quarterback Andrew Luck, who made hundreds of millions of dollars while he was in the NFL. The guy doesn't need the money. He left his other sports job for this offer to be the commissioner of the XFL. A commissioner of any sports league cannot just immediately get fired. It has to be done by a vote from the owners. And it has to be, some sports is majority, some sports it's unanimous. So the fact that Vince, just on a whim, because they're trying to cut costs, just said, no, you're fired, where any other sport organization, I understand this is a new one, it was first year back, so it's obviously, it's not like the NFL or any NBA or anything like that, 100% true there. But none of them fired their commissioners, or their general managers, or their coaches, or their board of directors to save money. So the fact that he's doing this just shows that, A, he knows nothing about professional sports. Obviously, he knows plenty about sports entertainment, but not necessarily sports, how they work. And B, the fact that he's only asking for the $20 million that his contract was for, Vince should be delighted about, because this should be even more. Because of, like, you know, the court costs, the mental anguish, whatever, you know, a lawyer will spring up. So he better get his money for this. And I kind of, in a weird, selfish way, hope other people that were maybe on XFL board, if they received similar letters, they join in on this. Because it was wrongful termination, as it was stated.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I know you mentioned, Josh, that he doesn't need this money, but who at his place in life needs that kind of money? He wants it, of course.
Well, sure. He deserves it.
Of course, he deserves it as well. He invested his time.
I mean,
this is his position, you know, and he wants to get that money he was promised back. And I don't blame him, or severance for that matter, for like being put in a position where he wasn't part of that decision making to probably lay off the company, like the employees of the company, and then file bankruptcy. Usually you would include your commissioner in that kind of a conversation.
Right.
Yeah. Also, if he wins and he's looking like... for a sugar baby, let me know.
What's your info? Put it out there.
He has to watch to the end of the show to get his keep watching. But I also feel like it's also he was the commissioner. It's not like he worked at a grocery store or, you know, it's not like he could turn around and go, hey, NFL, let me be the commissioner now. Get rid of Goodell. You know what I mean? Like, it's
yeah, they can't exactly do that.
So it's not like you can just like there's commissioner jobs all over the place. Unless you, you know, maybe he can be the commissioner of Raw.
Oh my god,
that's so funny. All right, well, next up in news, are you guys ready for the next one?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. I hate to burst the bubble of the commenter from my, actually I think it was the AfterBuzz page, that said that I sounded stupid for talking about the stock market and WWE's making process by laying off these employees. Well, looks like I'm not the stupid one here, because WWE reports booming profit and sales after furloughing wrestlers and stock jumps. And I totally called this when we talked about this last week.
At least you're not bitter about a negative comment.
I'm not bitter about it, but should like, come on, here we see the results a week later. So here it goes. WWE stock is positive 14.64%. in a jump from 14.6% Friday after it reported the fiscal first quarter net income of $26.2 million. So you guys, like, they're seeing jumps in the stock market for each share, and this is obviously making their investors happy, like I originally talked about. So, you know, every decision WWE is making right now is so that they can keep their corporate executive people happy. And so I just want to go over like a few of these numbers here. So the revenue improved 60% to a record $291 million from $182.4 million a year ago. Analysts surveyed by FactSet had expected earnings of 26 cents a share on sales of $272 million. Now, right now, I think it's up 31 cents a share from a loss of 11 cents from that year ago quarter. Some other interesting stuff is that McMahon and interim chief financial officer Frank Riddick III downplayed the impact of coronavirus in a conference call Thursday afternoon, saying a paucity of live sports events led to a record 967 million video views of its annual WrestleMania event on April 4th. Through six. And they also put out the statement, Vince McMahon put out the statement, we've adapted our business model in new ways. That's to cut costs, obviously, and offset the economic impact of COVID-19. He also said this is a challenging environment and we need to think of doing things differently, which could mean more movies, original programming on the WWE network and cable television, thematic tape presentations of wrestling matches, he added. Now, do you guys think that Vince McMahon will be expanding these properties? Will he be doing more since the live events are obviously not necessarily live at the current moment? Will he be shooting more movies or other things to compensate for what they're not able to produce at the Performance Center on like a normal scale?
The only thing that I really, that I hope comes out of all this is, if they're still showing that they're making more money, then let's have fewer house shows so the wrestlers are not wrestling as much and have more time at home. If they're showing proof that they don't necessarily need all the people to wrestle four or five nights a week to make this money, then don't have them do it. That will extend their careers for long, so the company could make more money off of them. They would make more money because they'd wrestle longer and they'd have more time at home. If they will do that from learning from this, fine. That's my main takeaway from that.
For sure.
Well, I saw I did see a thing where it said, like, I mean, it was like from that meeting where I think Vince was like, yeah, our live events is going to be way different after this. Like, but also the fact is they try to run, like, you know, 15,000 seat, you know, arenas where, like, for a Raw SmackDown, like, yeah, that's okay because, you know, but for house shows, like, why are they not running the NXT route of, like, let's just do smaller buildings. We'll get, you know, 2,000 people in here. And, you know, at least if people show up, it'll feel like, oh my God, wow, look at, there's a lot of people here.
Yeah.
Feel crowded at least, and not, you know, tarping off half an arena just to say, like, just to say that they're at Staples, yet half the arena's tarped off. Like, what's the point of that? I don't get that part. I mean, I just want to say, sorry, I need one thing that kind of, when you, Gabby, you're talking about them, like, you know, touting the success of WrestleMania and how it was the most social media WrestleMania yet. It annoys me because I get you're trying to say, like, hey, something really big good happened. But guess what? We're in some really crappy times. And your WrestleMania being two nights was the only thing on TV for those two nights. So, like, you can't say that, like, oh my God. You could say it was the most social media WrestleMania yet, but compared to normal times, well, you can't.
Of course it was the most social media because nobody was physically there. They're all just sitting at home tweeting about it.
Exactly. So it's like, if I'm looking at that and I'm an investor, I'm not going to go, oh my God, they had so many people, you know, on social media, where it's like, well, yeah, 100,000 people would have been at the stadium.
And what do you mean by social media, by the way? Because this was 967 million video views of WrestleMania.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Yeah. The network, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter.
Like, overall. All the clips.
Yeah, they didn't have a billion people tune in to watch WrestleMania on the network.
Yeah, no. So it's like, yeah,
meant like tweets, though, like as in people tweeting about it.
That too. I'm sure that's
included. Yeah.
Any little video clips of it, yeah, is what they're counting.
I just think that's like a cop out. I mean, the NFL did it the other day too, Grant. We were talking about that earlier, where you're like, but there's nothing on TV. So, like, how can you, Grant, you're going to be the highest, this is going to be the highest ratings you're ever getting because there's nothing else to watch. Like, so it's like, it's hard to, like, for next year, whenever things go back to normal, you can't go, oh, but last year you had a billion. Why don't you have that this year? It's like, because the world went back to normal and, you know. Normal.
What I find interesting is the fact that they're actually doing really well compared to same time last year, which is usually a super profitable time for them post WrestleMania. So the fact that with all this going on post WrestleMania, they're doing much better than what they would be making with live shows, with live events, like you said, Josh, all that craziness. So it's interesting to see how it's really going to change the landscape of their business.
Mm-hmm. Yet they still have to get rid of people, which is a weird thing to see happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I also want to add in here, the company said that they have available cash and debt capacity of $500 million, all right? And Vince McMahon actually said, we have no debt, cash is king. Maybe we are not taking any necessary risks.
So why isn't he paying Oliver?
So why do we fire everybody?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Like, and because it really could have been like, why didn't they just go to those people and go, listen, we're going to have to cut your salary, but we're going to keep you on payroll till this is over. And then when it's over, we're going to let you go probably, you know, like, I don't know. There are so many ways they could have done this to make it better, but
Well, also keep in mind that here's some interesting stats. Media rights are accounted for 88% of WWE's quarterly revenue, or $256.6 million. And then live events, $17.5 million. And consumer products are $16.9 million. So there's been a decline of 33% and 19%, respectively, from the year-ago quarter. Just so you guys have, like, an idea. The consumer products, I believe, are where the decline is, obviously. Makes sense.
I'm not shopping on the WWE shop right now.
they're not selling as much merch and products as they have been when I'm sure there's live events going on. So it makes sense that it went down. from 33% to 19%. Interesting. Okay, so in lighter news and some more positive news,
please,
something really cool that's going on is during this coronavirus pandemic that's hitting the globe, there are a few Mexican wrestlers that are sewing Lucha Libre face masks. Now, we know that this coronavirus has been also hitting Mexico City hard, and there were about, I want to say, as of like recently, in the most recent few days, it was reported that there was over 9,500 confirmed cases in Mexico. So it's definitely required in Mexico City to wear masks when outdoors right now. And so in honor of that, like new law, that's the stipulation when you go outside. We know that Lucha Libre is a way that wrestlers, I mean, it's huge in Mexico City, and wrestlers in Mexico dating back over like centuries, and competitors wearing these like colorful masks and hiding like their identity. It's like a tradition over there. So they have decided to create these masks out of like inspiration of Lucha Libre gear to give to different people that want to order it, I'm sure online, and they'll ship it to you. So El Santo is one of those wrestlers these ideas are inspired. He's one of the greatest in history. He died in the 80s, but like some of these designs are based off like him. And so El Hijo de Soberano is not able to work. He's a fighter. So he's one of these people making these face masks. It's really cool. If you guys are interested in checking them out, you can definitely look up the designs. They're only about 50 Mexican pesos, which is equivalent to $1.50 each, from, I think, let's see, Gray Cat, if you want to order from Gray Cat. And then from the other wrestler, let's see, the ones that have inspirational designs from El Santo and Blue Demon, they sell for 150 Mexican pesos, which is about €5 each. So you can look that up online and order it, and they're shipping across Central America and the US. So pretty cool. I think it's pretty fun if you're a huge wrestling fan to like kind of get different types of protective gear so that you can go out in style. Yeah. What do you guys think about that? Wrestlers doing things to make
it,
so give back.
Yeah, it's great, and there should be more doing so around the world. I mean,
yeah,
I think it's a great idea, and there are plenty of wrestlers in other countries that also wear masks. That is just like, oh, well, you know what? You help design these type of things, or whatever the case might be for specific wrestling companies. Do it. Help, you know, do things to help give back. Obviously, a number of performers already are doing it. This is a great example of it, but there can be more. There could always be more with everything going on right now.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Now I'm going to bring you back to not so great news again.
No!
Sorry, guys.
We'll
end up on a positive note, I promise. WWE's Velveteen Dream is denying allegations that he sent explicit photos to minors. Now, the whole story is that, according also to a Wrestling Inc. article by Mark Middleton, a user on Reddit posted a screenshot of a conversation that they had with Dream through Instagram direct messages. Now, per H. Jenkins of Ringside News, the Reddit user said they were 17 years old and they posted a censored version of an explicit photo they said Dream had sent to them. Now, the Reddit user wondered whether Dream's account had been hacked, but said a phone conversation occurred and that the caller sounded like Dream. The user said their friends had also sent explicit messages. Per Jenkins, the post has since been deleted from Reddit. Now, Clark, who's Dream, is insisting that it wasn't a photo he ever approved to send. He didn't send it, that somebody probably hacked into his account. Do you guys think that Dream actually had these conversations, or do you think, yeah, his account was definitely hacked, or maybe this wasn't even a legit conversation between Dream and this person, and somebody just was able to get these photos, you know, that were, you know, kept private on his files or phone or whatever, and were able to get those and then release it? What do you think's the story here?
Yeah, you never know. It's always a super, super tricky subject. I don't want to touch too much on it, but I hope that it works out for everybody in the best. You know, I hope that Dream wasn't hacked, and if he was hacked, that's good because he didn't really do it. And I hope that the truth comes to light because it's very, very scary. And I'm just going to stop right there. I'm just not going to say anything else.
I mean, it's the one thing, because obviously we know nothing yet. It's a matter of more and more evidence or documents, you know, being released if they are ever. But one thing that definitely sticks out to me is I saw Velveteen's tweet about it before I even know what it was about. So to me, the fact that that came out so early, in the fact that it was just like, I was trying to look up, wait, what is he tweeting about? Why is he saying these are false or da da da? I'm like, I don't even know what it is. And eventually I found out, I was like, oh, this is interesting. That he was so far ahead of it makes me hope that he was hacked. So he's just trying to clear his name as soon as possible. But obviously, there's only so much that we can comment on without getting all the facts at this point. And I hope just A, for his sake as a performer, and B, for just his sake as a good person, that it was hacked, or that whoever the person was lying to him about their age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about you, Tom?
I mean, yeah, I think it's a thing of like, we have to wait and see what happens. Mm-hmm. I also think it's if he was hacked, it's not different than, you know, any of the other celebrities out there that get their stuff hacked, you know, which I think is, you know, real messed up. Like, if it's a girl sending a picture to her boyfriend, and yet, you know, somehow because she's a celebrity, someone hacks on her phone and tries to, you know, it's just all messed up. It's just such a weird situation, and it's like such a weird, it's a messed up violation of people where, you know, if it's your boyfriend or girlfriend, you know, granted, I mean, taking a picture is stupid. But I mean, it's just one of those where you're like, that's technology of the day, and that's what people do sometimes. And it's like,
what are we gonna learn?
And we've seen over these last few years, seen a lot of wrestlers. It happened to Seth Rollins. It happened to Paige. It happened. Yeah, yes, Bryant. I understand you're wearing a Seth Rollins shirt.
Hello,
Tony's. Allegedly happened.
Is that why you wore that shirt today?
Yes, exactly.
So I mean, it happened. I think it happened to Becky too. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, there's been a number of them that somehow this is hacked. And you would think after the first one, they'd be like, I'm going to stop taking photos and videos of myself. But who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wish they would also release what phone that they use, because if you're on an iPhone or you're using like a cloud, like I want to know where the security breaches are. But in this case, my opinion is that there's a possibility he didn't do this and he was hacked also. In his tweet that he put out, he said, I am working with a third party to look into this matter. So the fact that he's even doing that to me says like, maybe he's trying to investigate further to find out like how this person was able to do this if it wasn't him, and where maybe their IP address comes from. Like, I know if like, let's say, cause I was having flashes when you guys were speaking your opinions, let's say this was a court case and I was like the attorney or something. If I was going to defend Dream in this case, I would say, well, if this direct message went out at a certain time of day, where were you at the time this was sent? Where did this ping from? Yeah. Where was the IP address? Mm-hmm. Like, do you have an alibi? Were you at a WWE performance taping show? And then you were performing at that time. So like, clearly you couldn't have done that. So we would know like that at that time that it was sent, it definitely couldn't have been him. So maybe that's what he's doing right now, is like looking to a third party to see like where this message originated from, as in like if it was hacked, like did the message get sent from a Canadian like IP address, or, you know, somewhere in North Dakota. I don't know. I'm just making up like places, but you can look into that.
Shout out North Dakota.
So random.
But yeah, I think the fact that he is getting ahead of it, or at least he's reaching out and trying to, you know, work with either the police or something, you know, makes it seem like he's trying to, you know, get this resolved as fast as he can.
Yeah.
All right. Well, our last story of the day is another Kevin Owens story. If you guys remember, there was a Raw episode where Kevin Owens had a pie thrown in his face. And he recently did an interview with a 10-year-old on the AJ Awesome show. So shout out to this 10-year-old journalist who got KO as a guest.
I can't get KO on Josh Talks, and this 10-year-old is getting him. That's not fair.
Listen, the 10-year-old probably has connections.
I guess so.
So pretty much Kevin said, the only answer I can give people is that in the end, even if it wasn't him who physically did it, the one who ultimately threw the pie at me is Vince McMahon, Owens explained, because he's the one who decided that pie was going to hit me in the face, and he wasn't there physically to do it, but he's the one who made it happen. That would be the answer to who threw the pie in Kevin Owens' face. If you guys want to check out that episode, it's episode 109, and it's on the AJ Awesome show. So yeah, that concludes Wrestling Wrap of the Week. Please put your comments down below and let us know what you think about all of these stories that we talked about today and your opinions on them. And if you have any, you know, things that you want to share or talk about.
Absolutely. And we're going to wrap this show up now. Make sure, let us know your thoughts on the Wrestling Wrap. Let us know your thoughts on SmackDown. Let us know just, you know, your thoughts. Let us know how you're doing. We want to see how you're doing, guys. We want to make sure you're well. You're staying indoors. You're washing your hands. You're staying safe. You're hanging out with all of us. We appreciate all of you. And you can keep talking to us on various forms of social media. Brian, how can people reach out to you?
Yes, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok at TheBrianSantos and on AfterBuzz TV's Quarantine with the Stars.
All right, Tom Connelly.
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TomTheCom. Check out my Etsy store, Connelly Central. Still selling stuff there. And I'm also still making shields for healthcare workers. So go check out 3dagentsofshield.com if you want to donate.
All right, Gabby.
Awesome. And you guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Gabby Loren TV. And also please subscribe to my YouTube channel. I recently began a self-development podcast that talks about spirituality with a dose of Torah in there. So if you want to learn more, no matter what your background is or how you feel about spirituality, please definitely connect on there. I have a really cool interview coming up the week after this with a human rights activist and Jewish activist. So it's going to be super cool to hear from him.
All right. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Josh_Tariff. Also, please subscribe to my YouTube page, youtube.com/Josh Tariff. Check out these recap shows are on there, as well as Josh Talks, my one-on-one interviews with various wrestlers. This coming Tuesday is part one of two with the legendary Al Snow. So you don't want to miss that. So check that out. And, of course, for all your other gossip that you want to know through the world of AfterBuzz, follow them on Twitter at AfterBuzzTV. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. For Gabby Loren and Brian Santos and Tom Connelly, I'm Josh Sheriff, and we will see you later.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.